Turn to Proverbs 10 and verse 30. Getting close to the end of chapter 10. I'm only going to cover one verse tonight. Proverbs 10:30, it says, "The righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth." So we'll look at that first part. The righteous shall never be removed. Start by defining a couple of terms. Now, righteous, when we're speaking of persons, means just, upright, virtuous, guiltless, sinless, conforming to the standard of the divine or the moral law, acting rightly or justly. And it says the righteous shall never be removed. To remove means to move or shift from or out of the place occupied, to lift or push aside, to lift up and take away, to take off. Means to take away, withdraw from a place, person, etc., to raise, abandon, a siege. Reflexively, if you've removed yourself, it's to betake oneself away. It's also to take or convey away from a place, to keep apart, separate. Also, removed means taken away by death. And the righteous will not be removed in a few of these senses when you look at it from an eternal perspective anyway, and we'll look at that here in a minute. So in other words, if we put all the definitions in, just, upright, and virtuous people who conform themselves to the standard of God's law and act justly will never be taken away from the earth. And why I add in the earth there is because the end of that, the second half of that proverb says, but the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. So we can see that the righteous are not going to be removed from the earth. The wicked are not going to inhabit the earth. Now there's a couple of ways we can look at this. But before we get into that, so it says the righteous shall not be removed from the earth or from their place where they're residing. But of course, there's always exceptions to the rules, right? This is the rule, and eternally speaking, the righteous will never be removed, and we'll talk about that. But sometimes righteous people will be removed from their property or their country temporarily because of the sin of the rest of the nation. Because remember, we're talking about the righteous here. We're talking about people that are conforming to God's law. So I'm not talking about sinners being removed, because sinners get taken out and removed from their place all the time. Like Israel, that happened to them numerous times. Even through the book of Judges, they would continually get taken over by other powers and so on. And that happened to them by the Babylonians, by the Assyrians, by the Romans. But we're talking about righteous people here. But righteous people can be temporarily removed because they get basically swept up with the rest of them. And I'll give you a couple of examples of that. One of them is Jeremiah. In Jeremiah 43, 5 through 7, you may remember this from the Suffering and Deliverance series when we talked about Jeremiah, I think for a number of Sundays, if I remember right. And right at the end of Jeremiah's life, when things were really getting bad, and there had been some Jews had already been carried away, and then they had come back, and then Jeremiah and those ones that had come back, they get carried off to Egypt. In Jeremiah 43, 5 through 7, it says, "But Johanan, the son of Kareah, and all the captains of the forces took all the remnant of Judah that were returned from all nations," this is when they were scattered because of the Babylonians, "whither they had been driven, and to dwell in the land of Judah, even men and women and children and the king's daughters and every person that Nebuzaradan, captain of the guard, had left with Gedaliah, the son of Ahikam, the son of Shaphan, and Jeremiah the prophet, and Baruch, the son of Neriah. So they came into the land of Egypt, and they obeyed not the voice of the Lord. Thus came they even to Tapanes." So these people that had been left in the land and they had returned, so they'd been driven somewhere and then they had been brought back and they had been left in the land by the Babylonians. Now Jeremiah and these people are taken by this Johanan fellow and his captains of his forces, they're taken down into Egypt. So Jeremiah is removed from his place. He'd even bought some land there and sealed it and everything. And he's removed from his place and taken down to Egypt. This was not his fault. Jeremiah was a righteous man. But this does not make this verse not true. It says the righteous shall never be removed, because this is talking about in an eternal sense, in a big picture sense, as we'll talk about here in a minute. Another example would be Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and Daniel, in Daniel chapter 1. And I'm not going to read that whole passage there, but Daniel 1, 1 through 8 talks about when the Babylonians had taken captive the nation of Israel, they wanted to get some of the young men there in Israel that were well-educated, no children had no blemish, they were well-favored, skillful in wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and had the ability to stand in the king's palace, like some really top-notch young kid, teenagers probably, that were very highly educated and skilled with manners and all that, that would be able to stand there in the king's palace. These four boys, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, ended up being the four that they had chosen. And these boys were removed from Israel, and they were taken to a foreign land, so they were removed from their place. But like I said, you know, in general, generally speaking, God will bless the righteous to dwell and remain in the land that he's given them on this earth, in this life, and but especially in the next. In Proverbs chapter 2, verse 21, we'll look at a verse that we looked at a long time ago in this series. Proverbs 2:21 says, "For the upright shall dwell in the land, and the perfect shall remain in it." So generally speaking, if you're an upright person, especially if you live among an upright people, you're going to dwell on your land, you're going to be okay. If you happen to be an upright person and you dwell among a bunch of sinners, and you know, sometimes when the scourge comes, it ends up taking you along with it. And that was the case with Jeremiah and with these Hebrew children. But what this verse is really getting at here, I do believe, is that the righteous are never going to be removed from the earth. From the new earth, that is. They're never finally and eternally going to be removed from the earth. God is going to create a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness. 2 Peter 3 and verse 13. And of course, our spirits and souls are going to be removed from this earth if we die before the coming of Christ, right? The soul and body are going to go to be returned to be with the Lord. Our body is going to remain on this earth. It's going to be buried in the earth. But then one day at the resurrection, we're going to inhabit the new earth, which is going to be something I'm going to be talking about here in this heaven series a lot. But it's going to be a reformed, remade. That's not the word I'm looking for either. But it's reconstructed, rejuvenated, whatever. It's going to be an improvement of the old one. 2 Peter 3 and verse 13. 2 Peter 3:13 says, "Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth wherein dwelleth righteousness." That's what we're looking for. Our hope is not in this earth. At least mine's not. The idea of some people that think that this earth, like the Jehovah's Witnesses, this earth is going to abide forever and it's going to be the way it is, you know, here now forever. That's not something I'm looking forward to. Revelation 22 and verse 14. Now, of course, they believe that Jesus is going to come back and clean it up and make it, you know, he's going to rule and reign, make it better or whatever. But no, it's kind of like, you know, certain things when something's messed up enough, you can't really fix it anymore. You just have to completely raise it, just totally destroy it and remake it. No, that's the condition of this earth and the people on it. It needs to just be wiped completely clean and started over. Revelation 22 and verse 14 says, "Blessed are they that do his commandments." So we're talking about righteous people. That's basically righteousness by definition, doing God's commandments. that they may have right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates into the city. So the righteous are going to enter into the city, that's the New Jerusalem, which is on the new earth, and they're going to be there forever. They're never going to be removed. The righteous are going to inherit that earth, the new earth. Let me just give you a few verses back here in the Old Testament that point to this, and then we'll compare that with something that Jesus said, and I think it should all make some pretty good sense. Psalm 25, 12 through 14. Psalm 25, 12 through 14. It says, "What man is he that feareth the Lord? Him shall he teach in the way that he shall choose. His soul shall dwell at ease, and his seed shall inherit the earth. The secret of the Lord is with them that fear him, and he will show them his covenant." So we're talking about people that fear God, which are righteous people, and it says there that his seed shall inherit the earth. Yeah, they might inherit a little plot of ground during their lives on this earth, but they're going to inherit the earth. Like, not just a little postage stamp on the earth, but the earth, right? So this is not referring to the here and now, I don't believe. This is referring to after the resurrection, where we are going to inherit all things. Look at Psalm 37 and verse 9. Psalm 37, 9. And we'll also catch verses 11 and 22 also. Psalm 37, 9 says, "For evildoers shall be cut off, but those that wait upon the Lord, they shall inherit the earth." They're the righteous ones. They won't be removed, right? They're going to inherit the earth. They're going to possess it by inheritance. Verse 11, "But the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace." See, this is clearly prophesying of a future time, I do believe, because we don't delight in the abundance of peace in this life. In this life, we have tribulation. You know, Jesus said, "Be of good comfort." He said, "And in me you shall have peace, but in the world you shall have tribulation." Right? So, in this world, in this earth, we're not going to have an abundance of peace. We have some peace, but I think this is pointing towards something yet future. And then in verse 22, "For such as be blessed of him shall inherit the earth, and they that be cursed of him shall be cut off." And then Matthew 5:5 is quoting this verse here in Psalm 37:11, where our Lord Jesus said, "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." That's what he said, right? "Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth." Now, the verse that I was referring to, which will put this into context, is Luke 20:20 and verse 35. Because here Jesus talks about this world versus that world. And he shows us that there are two worlds as it pertains to life on this earth. Luke 20 and verse 35. And this, I do believe, is the earth that we are not going to ever be removed from. Luke 20:35. Let's just back up to verse 34. "And Jesus answering said unto them, The children of this world marry and are given in marriage, but they that shall be accounted worthy to obtain that world," to obtain it, like inherit it, to remember the righteous shall inherit the earth, "that are worthy to obtain that world and the resurrection from the dead, neither marry nor are given in marriage." So in the world to come, in the resurrection, there's no marriage, for one thing. But what I'm really getting at here is that there is another world yet to come. There is a new earth, and we will never be removed from that one. There will be no going out once the righteous receive their eternal inheritance on the new earth. Because remember, it said the righteous shall inherit the earth. And in Hebrews 9:15, it says that our inheritance is an eternal inheritance. And from that, I can derive this point. Hebrews 9:15 says, "And for this cause, he is the mediator of the New Testament," that's Jesus Christ, mediator of the New Testament, "that by means of death, for the redemption of the transgressions that were under the first testament, they which are called might receive the promise of eternal inheritance." Now, if you have an eternal inheritance, that means you possess it forever. That means there's no going out of your eternal inheritance, right? Every inheritance we get down here, everything, every blessing we have in this earth is only temporary. But our inheritance of the new earth is eternal. That means once we go in there, there is no going back out. No more sad goodbyes. No more, how's the hymn say it? No more tearful eyes. No more.
No sad farewells.
No sad farewells, no tearful eyes. Something like that.
For all his peace and joy and love and the soul of man never dies.
That's right, yes. So yeah, I look forward to that day. No saying goodbye anymore. Now, here's an interesting point. The old earth will be removed, but the righteous will never be removed. So the earth itself is going to be removed, but the righteous are never going to be removed from the earth that we will inherit. Look at Psalm 46 in verse 2, and then I've got a couple of verses that I thought of later on that I've added in here with it. Psalm 46 in verse 2, a beautiful psalm. It's a good psalm to read when there's turmoil going on in the world and you're concerned about the state of things. This ought to put it in perspective for you. Psalm 46 in verse, I'll just start with verse 1. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake and the swelling thereof, Selah. So, I mean, this could be referring figuratively to God's judgments during our life on this earth. I mean, the Bible does use terminology like that. You go read like the book of Revelation and talks about the judgments at the end of time and mountains being cast into the sea and so on. But this could literally be referring to the second coming, the destruction of this earth, when the earth is removed, when the mountains are cast down, when the whole thing is just completely destroyed. Though the earth be removed, but we won't ever be removed. So the earth itself will be, but we won't. Now look at Revelation 20 and verse 11. Just got a couple of more verses here which show you that the earth will be removed. Revelation 20 and verse 11. It says, and I saw a great white throne, and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. The earth and the heaven, it's all removed. God just casts it off, and he's going to burn it up and create a new one. And then down, just a few verses down in Revelation 21 and verse 1, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. So the earth will be removed, but we will never be removed. The righteous shall not be removed. And then there's also another sense, more of a spiritual sense, that the righteous, the just who conform themselves to God's law and act justly, will never be removed from the church and from the faith of Jesus Christ. So we won't be removed from our faith, from our place in the church. Let me just give you some verses here. In 1 Corinthians 15:58, this is because the righteous are steadfast and unmovable. They stand their ground, spiritually speaking. That's what a lot of the Christian life is about, is just standing your ground. That's why Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6, to stand, and when you've done all, to stand, stand therefore, and he keeps saying stand. Sometimes all you have to do is just be steadfast, just stand there. You don't necessarily have to be out there fighting battles and trying to change the world and the culture and everything else. Just stand. Just do what God told you to, and the battles will come, and you'll be buffeted about, and you just stand your ground. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as ye know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. What we do here on this earth, our labor for God is not in vain. It's not a waste of time. It's not useless. What we're doing is very important. going to church, worshiping God, going to Bible study, these things are very important. And just going about doing our jobs, raising our children, whatever God has given us to do, taking care of the house, all those things, our labor's not in vain, because when we do them to the Lord, they have merit and value in His sight. And everything that we do, we're supposed to do unto the Lord. We're told in Ephesians and Colossians and different places. So we ought to be steadfast and unmovable. Nothing wrong with being bullheaded when it comes to being bullheaded for the truth and not being moved away from our faith. 1 Corinthians 16 and verse 13 says, "Watch ye, stand fast in the faith, quit you like men, be strong." And these words are especially important to us today, because there's all kinds of assaults and all kinds of temptations out there that we face all the time, and we need to be steadfast. We need to quit ourselves like men. We need to be strong. This is no time for weakness. This is no time for being weaklings.
Compromising.
Being a sissy. That's right. This is it's time to put on our big boy pants. Philippians 4 and verse 1. Philippians 4 and verse 1 says, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, dearly beloved, and longed for, my joy and crown, so stand fast in the Lord, my dearly beloved." You start to see a pattern here where Paul is telling, you know, these Christians in these different churches to stand fast, to not move, to not be removed. Hebrews 10 and verse 23. "Let us hold fast the profession of our faith without wavering, for He is faithful that promised." You know, I don't think I have this verse, but the pastor is supposed to be holding fast the faithful word that he hath been taught, and that applies to all of us. Hold fast the profession of our faith. What you first believe, when you first were converted to the truth and you stood up there and you gave your profession of faith, you hold fast to that. Don't be moved away from it. Don't allow heretics to convince you otherwise. Colossians 1 and verse 23. If you do this, you show the evidence in your life that you are a child of God, that you've been bought with the blood of Christ. Colossians 1 and verse 23. Let's back up a little bit here. Let's back up to verse 21. "And you that were sometime alienated and enemies in your mind by wicked works, yet now hath He reconciled." So it's a completed fact. He has reconciled you who were at one time enemies in your mind by wicked works, in the body of His flesh through death, to present you holy and unblameable and unreprovable in His sight, if ye continue in the faith, grounded and settled, and be not moved away from the hope of the gospel which ye have heard, and which was preached to every creature which is under heaven, whereof I, Paul, am made a minister. The grammar of this text is very interesting, because it says He hath reconciled you. Okay, so that's a completed fact. It's already done. If ye continue, He has reconciled you. If ye continue, and you're like, wait a minute, if means it's conditional, so how could He have already reconciled us if we do something? It's the evidence. If you continue steadfast in the faith, grounded and settled, be not moved away from the hope of the gospel, you are one that He did reconcile. If you don't continue in the faith, you don't have any claim on or any evidence that you're one that He hath reconciled. You have no way of knowing that you are reconciled if you don't continue in the faith. That's why it's so important to hold on to our faith. Look at 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 15. 2 Thessalonians 2:15. All these verses keep talking about being steadfast and unmovable. You kind of get the impression maybe that Christians have a tendency sometimes to be moved away from their faith, to be shaken, to get weak right? And Paul just tells us over and over and over again to hold fast to the faith. 2 Thessalonians 2:15, therefore, brethren, stand fast and hold the traditions which ye have been taught, whether by word or our epistle. Stand fast, hold on to the things that the apostles passed down, whether they did it orally or whether they did it by writing in the epistles, which is what we have here in our Bible. Hold fast to these things that they taught us. Remember Ephesians chapter 6, 13 through 14, which I just made reference to a minute ago. Paul says a number of times in a row to stand. Ephesians chapter 6, 13 through 14. Wherefore, take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all to stand, stand therefore, having your loins girt about with truth, and having on the breastplate of righteousness. That's a lot of times, and I'm sure I've said this before, but that's what got the early Christians in the Roman Empire in trouble. It wasn't so much what they were doing, it's what they wouldn't do. Because Caesar didn't care if you worship Jesus. I mean, there's gods, many lords, many. There's all kinds of gods out there. You can worship any god you want. You want to worship Jesus? Go ahead. But you got to worship me, Caesar. You worship me, and then you can worship whatever other god you want. It's not what they did. It's what they wouldn't do. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't worship Caesar. They wouldn't worship another god. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of times when Christians get in trouble. Mm-hmm. It's not that we're out there doing anything on December 25th. It's what we're not doing on December 25th, right? We won't do pagan holidays, right? And that's why people get upset with us sometimes, especially family members and people like that. It's what we won't do. We got to be steadfast and established. And if you're steadfast on that topic, you will find out, and you have, and people that are new to the faith will find out that if you are steadfast, and you don't give in, and you don't compromise, your family will stop hounding you about it after, you know, 2 or 3 years, probably. It usually takes a couple of years, at least, to get it through their heads. But if you just keep being steadfast, and you say, nope, not coming over, not giving you a gift, not taking a gift, I don't want anything to do with it, stop asking me about it, they'll stop bothering you, like Naomi stopped bothering Ruth when she saw that she was steadfastly minded. And let me give you one more, Psalm 66 and verse 9. Psalm 66 and verse 9. Which holdeth our soul in life, and suffereth not our feet to be moved. And of course, you always want to remember in the previous verses that we read, where Paul tells us to be steadfast, established, standing, not moved, it's not of our own power, our own strength. Right here is the answer, which holdeth our soul, talking about God, which holdeth our soul in life and suffereth not our feet to be moved. That's the only chance that you have to ever stand fast in the faith, is by God giving you that grace and strength to do so. You can't do it of your own strength. The righteous are rooted and grounded in the truth and in the love of Christ. This makes it a lot easier to stand when you're rooted. Look at Ephesians 3 and verse 17. It's pretty hard to remove a tree that has grown for years and is rooted and has those tap roots and the roots that go way down deep. Try grabbing a hold of one of those sycamore trees with your, you know, giving it a bear hug and pulling that thing out of the ground. It's not going anywhere, right? You'd have to have, you know, a major, major piece of equipment to just rip that thing out of the ground, because it's rooted. And if we as Christians are rooted in our faith, and we're solid in our faith, and we know what we believe, and we are convinced of it, and we are absolutely steadfast in that faith, and not willing to compromise, and it's the most important thing to us in our lives, we're not going to be easily moved or swayed from that. Ephesians 3 and verse 17, it says that Christ may dwell in your hearts by faith, that ye, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ, which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. To be able to comprehend the deeper things of the Bible, you've got to be rooted in the faith. You've got to have the basics down, and then you can start to comprehend and learn more. Colossians chapter 2, 6 through 7. But you can see this, and you've probably seen this in people that have departed the faith over the years. They start to get shaky, and they start to get wishy-washy, and they're not quite so convinced about everything anymore. And before you know it, and that always makes me really nervous when I see somebody and they start to question things and they start to, you know, wonder, well, what about this? I'm not sure about this. I noticed that in Minneapolis, but I wasn't real concerned about it in the beginning. It was about like the Trinity and some other stuff, which is interesting because, you know, I think a lot of that all tied into some of the heresy that ended up infecting some of those people. But I remember some of the younger guys start asking me about, like, I'm not sure, can you explain the Trinity to me or something? I'm having a hard time getting this. And, like, stuff like that just concerns me because, yeah, I realize that it's not the easiest concept in the world to get. But somebody that one time had no problem with it and then all of a sudden says, hey, you know, can you explain it? I'm not really understanding this. I get real nervous about that because I'm like, when you start to get shaky on stuff, that's not a good sign. I'm not saying never come to me with questions. If you haven't, please do. But it just, you know, my antenna kind of go up when I see people that used to understand things very clearly, and all of a sudden they're like, I'm not sure about that anymore, and then I get a little concerned. Colossians 2, 6 through 7 says, as ye have therefore received Christ Jesus the Lord, so walk ye in him, rooted and built up in him, established in the faith, as ye have been taught, abounding therein with thanksgiving. So you receive that initial faith, you walk in it, and you get more deeply and deeply rooted, and you build upon that faith. You've got to have a good foundation. You can't build anything if you don't have a good foundation. That's why it's important to understand the basics first. And it's interesting to me, you know, there's some people that they love to get off into all the prophecy and all the difficult stuff to understand and want to know about the New World Order and the synagogue of Satan and all this stuff, and they don't have the basics of the doctrine down, right? They want to get off into all this other stuff, and they don't have the fundamentals down. If you ask them to explain your sovereign grace, they'd fumble around. They wouldn't even know how to do it. We're told in Proverbs 12 and verse 3 that the root of the righteous shall not be moved. Proverbs 12 and verse 3. And that's the other thing that gets me a little concerned about new converts. If you get a new convert and they're not really all that concerned about sovereign grace, if that's just kind of a side issue, like that the grace of God, the truth of grace, is not like the thing that really gets them excited, that makes me a little nervous too, because that should be the one thing that should be extremely important to every Christian. And if that's just kind of a side thing and you're really interested in all this other stuff, that makes me a little concerned. Proverbs 12 and verse 3 says, a man shall not be established by wickedness, but the root of the righteous shall not be moved. The righteous shall not be removed, their root shall not be moved, but those that are established by wickedness, well, they won't be. They won't be established by wickedness. They will be removed. They will be blown away when any wind of doctrine comes, or the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. And then Psalm 125, this will be the last verse for this half of the proverb, tells us that they that trust in the Lord shall not be removed. Psalm 125 and verse 1. It says, they that trust in the Lord shall be as Mount Zion, which cannot be removed, but abideth forever. So this verse kind of brings the two things that I was talking about together. Because the verse in Proverbs here, Proverbs 10:30, when it says the righteous shall not never be removed, in comparison with the second half of the verse, it's talking about the earth, from the earth. But then I felt it important to talk about how we won't be removed and swayed and moved away from the faith of Jesus Christ. And then this verse kind of brings the two together. They that trust in the Lord, so there's our faith, shall be as Mount Zion, which cannot be removed, but abideth forever. So we will, if we hold fast our faith, we have the evidence that we will abide in our eternal inheritance forever. But the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. That's the second half of our proverb. The wicked shall not inhabit the earth. Wicked is bad in moral character, disposition, or conduct, inclined or addicted to willful wrongdoing, practicing or disposed to practice evil, morally depraved, a term of wide application but always of strong reprobation, implying a high degree of evil quality. So we're talking about bad, evil, nasty people, which we all were by grace before we were saved. It says, the wicked shall not inhabit the earth. To inhabit is to dwell in, occupy as an abode, to live permanently or habitually in a region, element, etc., to reside in a town, country, dwelling, etc., set of men and animals. So if we put it together and put the definitions into the verse, in other words, those who are morally depraved, practice evil, are bad in moral character, and who are inclined to willful wrongdoing will not dwell, occupy, and permanently live in the earth. They'll live there for a little while. They'll temporarily inherit the earth. As a matter of fact, they often rule it. Usually the wickeder the better. You know, ever notice how the big turds float to the top, you know, when it comes to that? Psalm 37 and verse 35. And that's not an exact quote from Scripture, but the Lord does say that he sets over men the basest of men. That's kind of like, in the Hebrew, that meant the big turds, you know? That's basically what it meant. I'm just making that up, but anyway. Psalm 37 and verse 25. What did I say? 37, 35. What did I say? 25. I meant 35, thank you. Psalm 37, 35. It says, I have seen the wicked. That's what we're talking about here, the people that won't inhabit the earth. I have seen the wicked in great power and spreading himself like a Green Bay tree. So yeah, he's inhabiting the earth. He's in great power. He's controlling a bunch of people on it. And a lot of times the wicked, they even live lavishly upon the earth for a time. Psalm 17, 13 through 14. You know, give every dog his due. This is the only earth they ever get, so let them have it for a little while. Psalm 17, 13 through 14. It says, Arise, O Lord, disappoint him, cast him down, deliver my soul from the wicked, which is thy sword, from men which are thy hand, O Lord, from men of the world, which have their portion in this life, and whose belly thou fillest with thy hid treasure. They are full of children, and leave the rest of their substance to their babes. So here's wicked people, and they've got their portion in this life. They won't inhabit the earth permanently, eternally, but temporarily they'll have it for a while. And they'll have it pretty good. Psalm 73, 3 through 7, which is, I think, the third sermon/Bible study in a row that I'm talking about Psalm 73. Sure, you sound familiar. Yeah. That's good, though. Repetition is the best way to learn. Psalm 73, 3 through 7 says, For I was envious at the foolish when I saw the prosperity of the wicked. Remember the wicked that aren't going to inhabit the earth? So he sees these people on the earth prosperous. For there are no bands in their death, but their strength is firm. They are not in trouble as other men, neither are they plagued like other men. See, now, this is partly clouded thinking, right? Because they're not in trouble as other men. They have no trouble. They have no problems. But of course that's not true, because everybody has trouble. Everybody has problems. You know, whether you're the richest, most powerful man in the world, everybody still has trouble. But the psalmist here, Asaph, he doesn't see their problems. What he sees from the outside is everything's going perfectly. They're rich, they're wealthy, they're prosperous.
Just the appearance.
Everything's great. He doesn't see all their problems. But anyway, you know, that's the problem with clouded thinking. Therefore, pride compasseth them about as a chain. Violence covereth them as a garment. Their eyes stand out with fatness. They have more than heart could wish. So yeah, they inhabit the earth for a while and enjoy themselves quite handsomely on it. Let me give you one more. Jeremiah 5 and verse 28. Jeremiah 5, 28. It says, they are waxen fat, they shine. Yea, they overpass the deeds of the wicked. They judge not the cause of the fatherless. Yet they prosper, and the right of the needy do they not judge. There's wicked people that are unrighteous judges and unrighteous rulers, yet they wax fat, right? They're prosperous. They're doing well. You know, they're enjoying themselves for a time. Now, sometimes the time of the wicked is short on this earth. Sometimes it's actually relatively long. Let me just give you a few verses here, which shows that oftentimes the time of the wicked is short on this earth. In Job 36, 13 through 14. Think about how many wicked celebrities die young. A lot of them do, right? They end up dying of drug overdoses or, you know, other alcoholism or problems like that. Job 36, 13 through 14. But the hypocrites in heart heap up wrath. They cry not when he bindeth them. They die in youth, and their life is among the unclean. So the old saying that the good die young is, I mean, that happens sometimes. But you know what? The bad die young too. They get what's coming to them. Look at Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 17. Ecclesiastes 7:17 says, be not overmuch wicked, neither be thou foolish. Why shouldest thou die before thy time? So they can check out early through overmuch wickedness. That's why if they have any sense, even though like the unjust judge, he says, though I fear not God and not regard man, but if you have any sense, you'll behave yourself. Because anybody, even if you don't believe in God, can see, you know what? When you live certain ways and you do evil things, it comes around back at you, and eventually, you know, you'll reap what you sow. So if you have any sense at all, you know, if the wicked would, they would try to behave themselves. And then, of course, the classic verse on this is Psalm 55 and verse 23. Psalm 55:23 says, but thou, O God, shalt bring them down into the pit of destruction. Bloody and deceitful men shall not live out half their days, but I will trust in thee. Think about old King Herod there in Acts chapter 12. I don't know how old he was, but he killed James with the sword. And then right after that, he makes this oration, and they say it's the voice of a God, not a man, and God struck him dead right there. Now, I don't know how old he was, whether he was half his days or not, but you know, that happens. God will cut him off in youth. But sometimes, the time of the wicked on earth is relatively long, like in Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 12. But that does not negate this verse that says that they won't inhabit the earth, because in the long run, they're not going to inhabit the earth. Ecclesiastes 8 and verse 12. Though a sinner do evil 100 times, and his days be prolonged, yet surely I know that it shall be well with them that fear God, which fear before him. But it shall not be well with the wicked, neither shall he prolong his days, which are as a shadow, because he feareth not before God. Yeah, he might do evil 100 times, and his days might just keep going. He may have his days lengthened out, but in the end, he's not going to prolong his days. He will get what's coming to him. But regardless how long or how short that the wicked live on this earth, they will eventually be cut off from the earth and be rooted out of it, in Proverbs 2 and verse 22. And I look forward to seeing that. Unfortunately, it seems like there's always another one to replace them when they're gone. But I look forward to seeing old Fauci getting rooted out of this earth, that's for sure. He's getting rooted out of his position. He's retiring, but that's a good thing. But I look forward to seeing him no more. Proverbs 2 and verse 22, "But the wicked shall be cut off from the earth, and the transgressor shall be rooted out of it." And you know, God describes the second coming, the judgment of the world, in terms kind of like this. Remember the parable where the man sowed his field with seed, and then an enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat? Mm-hmm. And the servants say, "You want us to pull up the tares?" And he says, "No, lest you pull up the wheat with them." And the parable, the interpretation of it was that the wheat are the children of the kingdom, the tares are the children of the devil, mm-hmm. and the reapers are the angels. And guess what they're going to do when they come back? They're going to root up. They're going to root up the tares, and they're going to cast them into the oven, into the furnace of fire. They're going to be rooted out of the earth. They are not going to inhabit the earth. Nothing evil will inhabit that holy place in the new earth. The wicked will not be there. Thank the Lord. Isaiah 35 and verse 8. "And thank the Lord that because of his grace we're not among them." Isaiah 35 and verse 8 says, "And an highway shall be there, and a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it, but it shall be for those, the wayfaring men, though fools, shall not err therein." This is a prophecy of the new heavens and the new earth. I'll be talking about that in this series coming up here. But it says there that there's going to be a highway there. It's going to be called the way of holiness, and the unclean shall not pass over it. No admission. They're not going to be able to get into that place. Isaiah 52 and verse 1. "Awake, awake, put on thy strength, O Zion, put on thy beautiful garments, O Jerusalem, the holy city. From henceforth there shall no more come into thee the uncircumcised and the unclean." This is another prophecy of the New Jerusalem. No uncircumcised and unclean people will be there. Revelation 21 and verse 27. We have to put up with them now, but it won't be that way forever. Revelation 21 and verse 27. "And there shall in no wise enter into it," this is the New Jerusalem on the new earth, "and there shall no wise enter into it anything that defileth, neither whatsoever worketh abomination or maketh a lie, but they which are written in the Lamb's book of life." No sinners, no liars, no people that work abomination, no defilement, no murderers, no whoremongers, no thieves, no blasphemers, no proud people, no sinners in that place. Revelation 22 and verse 15 says, "For without," outside in other words, "for without are dogs and sorcerers and whoremongers and murderers and idolaters and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie." Dogs, that refers to sodomites. Sorcerers, there's people that are into the occult and all these false, wicked, satanic religions. Whoremongers, there's your fornicators. Murderers, there's all the abortion doctors. There's all the warmongers, people that start these wars that end up killing all these people. There's the companies. One begins with a P and one begins with an M that make things that they stick in people's arms that have killed a lot of people. There's the murderers, the idolaters, and whosoever loveth and maketh a lie. There's all the media personalities, all the talking heads, all the propagandists out there, all the liars that have deceived so many of us for so long. None of them are going to be there. There's going to be no CNN in heaven. There's going to be no news media.
No fake news.
There's no fake news. There's going to be no more White House press secretaries up there uttering lies every single time they open their mouth. We're not going to have any of that. No more liars. That'll be really nice. They will be removed from this earth and cast into the lake of fire. Matthew 13 and verse 30. Matthew 13 and verse 30. I forgot this verse was even in here when I mentioned it a minute ago. Mm-hmm. Let them both, this is speaking to that parable that I was talking about a minute ago, let both grow together until the harvest, and in the time of harvest I will say to the reapers, gather ye together first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. And then verse 40 is the interpretation. As therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be in the end of this world. The Lord's going to come back to this world. He's going to root all the wicked out of this world. He's going to cast them into the lake of fire. He's going to create a new heavens and a new earth. And verses 49 and 50. So shall it be at the end of the world. The angels shall come forth and sever the wicked from among the just and shall cast them into the furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth. And that'll be the last we see of them. I turn to Revelation 20 and verse 15. This will be the last verse. The wicked shall not inhabit the earth. Revelation 20 and verse 15. And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. So the righteous shall not be moved or removed. We will spend eternity in our inheritance. But the wicked will be cast out. They'll be rooted out of it. And we will get to live in heaven with the Lord forever in peace and happiness and righteousness and never have to deal with another evil person, including our own flesh and our own hearts, ever again. And that will be a blessed day.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.